Welcome to In the Studio with a 21st Century Perspective on History's Greatest Rock Album.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One, turn two, three.
Redbeard here, and today in the studio, an eagle left the nest and built the perfect beast.
Songwriting is a bit like acting. You know, when an actor does a movie, they're all afraid it's the last time they're going to work again. And when I write a song, sometimes I go, well, gee, I don't know if I can do that again. But it always comes back. I still need to do this. It's therapy for me. I need to get this stuff out. You know? And it's nice that people want to hear it. Hi, I'm Don Henley.
And I'm Redbeard of Don Henley's breakthrough solo album, Building the Perfect Beast. During the original 8-year run, the American supergroup The Eagles racked up a string of 4 number one albums, numerous hits, and sold tons, millions of albums. Despite the trappings of superstardom, infighting and hard partying scattered the 5 individual Eagles, including singer-songwriter-drummer Don Henley. In the summer of 1982, Henley released his first solo album, I Can't Stand Still, containing the top 5 hit, Dirty Laundry. But overall, that album only hinted at Henley's next effort. In November 1984, Don Henley unleashed a monster. Building the Perfect Beast would contain 2 top 10 hits, a Grammy Award-winning vocal performance, and a music video that would come to define early MTV with the Boys of Summer, while selling more than 3 million copies of the album initially. Writing on AllMusic.com, Mike DeGagne correctly identifies that Don Henley's first solo album in 82, I Can't Stand Still, quote, showcases his stalwart partnership with producer and songwriter Danny Korchmar, paving the way for an extremely accomplished solo career, end quote. Don Henley told me how he chose to work in close with Danny Korchmar in the studio.
Danny was just in my circle of friends. I just knew him through other people. And We became closer as the years went by, and when the Eagles fell apart, I intuitively turned to him. I knew that I needed a collaborator because I'd always collaborated. I needed somebody who was a very good guitar player and keyboard player to help me with the musical part because my forte is lyrics and melodies and vocals and percussion and things like that, so I needed something to balance out my weak points. And I don't know, it wasn't a real conscious, thought-out decision. I just suddenly decided that he was the guy that I wanted to work with, and it just seemed to work out.
Something I can use.
peaking at number 5 on Billboard's singles chart in 1982, Don Henley's Dirty Laundry indicated that the combination of Don's incisive lyrics and golden voice melded successfully with Danny Kortchmar's co-writing, musicianship, and production talents. So for the follow-up, Henley hunkered down with Cooch in the studio for a solid 2 years, striving for musical perfection. I wondered aloud to Don Henley if there's any unintended consequence to tweaking music too long.
Absolutely. There's another reason that it takes so long, because sometimes we would take a month off and just get out of the studio.
Why? Why?
But for that very reason, to go and listen to the things and get our hearing back and be objective about what we were doing. Sometimes and I'm fortunate enough, I've been in the business long enough that I have that luxury. My record company doesn't really hassle me about deadlines. You know, I have deadlines, but they come and they go. And I get to take my own sweet time, which is something I've earned the right to do, I think. And so that helps with the objectivity. I get to back away from it for a while, go away for a week or two or three or four, and get fresh again, because you get sick and tired of these things. I mean, I really get sick of hearing my own voice. I get tired of being in the studio and hearing the same songs over and over. I probably heard each one of these songs 300 times. So it's very hard to keep things fresh and keep your objectivity. That's another reason to have partners. I try to surround myself with other people. My partner, Danny, you know, and sometimes he can be objective when I can't, and vice versa. I like to work with other people for that reason.
The working girls go by. Watch the best.
Sunset Grill on Don Henley's 1984 second solo album, Building the Perfect Beast, inspired by a real-life hamburger joint on Hollywood Sunset Boulevard. The song turned out to be a whopper of a hit, peaking at number 22 on Billboard Magazine's Hot 100. By then, co-writer and producer guitarist Danny Kortchmar had built a beast of a reputation of his own, with first James Taylor, then Jackson Browne, and Linda Ronstadt. Don Henley tells me how Kortchmar helped Don in building the perfect fit.
And in that sense, he's also a good balance for me because he's a New Yorker and I'm a Texan. Personality-wise, he's very intense. He likes rock and roll. It's funny, he spent all those years with James Taylor, but he hates to play acoustic guitar. You can't even get him to pick one up now, you know, hardly. And he loves to play electric rock and roll guitar. And he loves to write music that's intense. Even if it's a ballad, he likes to make it intense. And he was a good foil for me in that respect because he was from another musical community. He was from another part of the country, another background entirely. He's a student of records and record production. And we're a good balance for each other because I'm good with the vocals and the details and things like that, and the harmonies and melodies. And he's good at knowing how to program things and use machines. And he's also good at, you know, picking musicians. I'm good at picking vocalists. He's good at picking players. So we're an excellent team. We balance each other out perfectly because what I don't know, he knows, and vice versa. Sometimes I wonder where it is love goes. I don't know if even heaven knows. I know you had some dreams that didn't quite come true. Now I'm not the one little girl who's keeping you. I was either standing in your shadow or blocking your light.
Goodness.
Building the Perfect Beast. That's Don Henley with Not Enough Love in the World. When we come back, we'll talk with Henley about the fine act of songwriting. Follow In the Studio on Facebook. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Don Henley and Danny Korchmar for Don Henley's Building the Perfect Beast. Welcome back to In the Studio. This week, Don Henley's Building the Perfect Beast. I'm Redbeard. That's the album that made former and current Eagle Don Henley a star in his own right. It contains 9 songs, usually with Danny Korchmar, but also with heartbreaker Ben Montench and ex-heartbreaker Stan Lynch. I asked Don Henley about collaborating with songwriting partners.
You can't do it with just anybody. You know, you have to trust the person and they have to trust you. I don't know, the process of songwriting is still a mystery to me. I still don't know how we get from the beginning of it to the end of it. It
really?
Just happens, yeah. I still can't quite explain it, and I'm surprised sometimes that some of this stuff comes out of me. I read a lot. I try to read good authors, and I admire good songwriters. I look at other people's lyrics, and I try to study what's good and what's good about it. Songwriting is not quite as intimate a process as it used to be, because sometimes, nowadays... And I don't know if this is good or bad, but it seems to work. Danny will simply deliver me a cassette with a musical track on it, and I will just take it home and write it by myself, either in the car or at my house. I'll just play the music. And I can tell in the first couple of minutes when he plays me something, if I can write a song, if that song will pull a particular idea or particular concept out of my head that I've been thinking about, because I have a bank of things in my head that I want to talk about. And I can either overlay that onto a piece of music or I can't. If the music is right, it's not hard. Boys of Summer was that way too when Mike Campbell gave me that. They write themselves almost, you know, which is a great feeling. Some of the songs you start and you labor on them and you don't finish them for 6 or 8 months, sometimes a year. Sometimes you finish them while you're mixing.
Thank you.
Don Henley's The Boys of Summer, co-written with heartbreaker Mike Campbell, peaked at number 5, drove the Building the Perfect Beast album to over 3 million copies sold, copped Henley a Grammy Award for Best Male Rock Vocal that year, and accrued a beastly 4 MTV Video Awards with a song video which still defines early MTV to this day.
If you're vital and passionate and you still have something to say, there's no reason to stop. I mean, most of my favorite writers now are my contemporaries. I'm always glad to see record come out by some of the people that I liked in the 60s or the 70s, if it's a good record, you know. I'm glad to see people still doing it, you know. There's no reason that it has to stop. Songwriting is a bit like acting, you know. When an actor does a movie, they're all afraid it's the last time they're going to work again. And when I write a song, sometimes I go, well, gee, I don't know if I can do that again. But it always comes back, you know. Not to everybody, I guess. I'm always a little puzzled and frightened at the same time by guys who were brilliant songwriters in the past. I won't name any names, and can't do it anymore, or can't seem to do it anymore. Sometimes they get a second wind much later in life, but it seems to leave some people. But I think that's because you stop living, in a sense. You stop being interested in what's going on around you, and you stop being interested really in what you're doing. I still need to do this. It's therapy for me. I need to get this stuff out, you know. And it's nice that people want to hear it.
I used to work for Harvester. I used to use my hands. I used to make the tractors and the combines that plowed and harvested this great land. Now I see my handiwork on the block. Everywhere I turn, and I see the clouds cross the weathered faces, and I watch the harvest burn. I quit the plant in 57, had some time for farming then. Banks back then was lending money. The banker was the farmer's friend. I've seen dark days and dusty days, late spring snow and early fall sleet. I've held the leather reins in my hands, I felt the soft ground under my feet. Between the hot, dry weather and the taxes and the cold war, it's been hard to make ends meet. But I always put the clothes on our backs, I always put the shoes on our feet. Grandson, he comes home from college, says, we get the government we deserve. Son-in-law just shakes his head and says, that little punk, he never had to serve. And I sit here in the shadow of suburbia, look out across these empty fields. And I sit here in earshot of the bypass, and all night I listen to the rushing of the wind. Computers got incorporated too. Me, I just know how to raise things. That was all I ever knew. And now it all comes down to numbers. Now I'm glad that I have quit. Folks these days just don't do nothing simply for the love. Town on the 4th of July, watched them parade past the Union Jack, watched them break out the brass and beat on the drum. One step forward and two steps back, I saw a sign on Easy Street, said, be prepared to stop, pray for the independent little man. I don't see next year's crop. And I sit here on the back porch in the twilight, and I hear the crickets hum. I sit and watch the lightning in the distance, but the showers never come.
clock strike, and I wonder when I'll see my companion again.
Wow, Don Henley's ode to the plight of the American farmer. The song is called A Month of Sundays from Building the Perfect Beast. Still to come, Don Henley and Danny Korchmar return with me. I'm Redbeard. You're with Don Henley for Building the Perfect Beast. Welcome back to In the Studio. This week, it's on how to build the perfect beast with Don Henley. I'm Redbeard. As purveyors of honest, intelligent songs, the thought occurred to me that many people look to the music of performers like Don Henley and Danny Korchmar for help in sorting out their lives. I couldn't help but wonder how they felt about that.
Yeah, well, we certainly don't have all the answers, and there are many people who think that performers and artists should keep their mouths shut and not have anything to say about this sort of thing. But I'm a citizen, I'm a taxpayer, so is he. Mm-hmm. You know, and I got a right to put my 2 cents worth in.
Maybe more than a right. Maybe some responsibility to your fans.
I don't think there's a responsibility to tell people how to live, but there is a responsibility to ask questions.
We're not in
the guru business. Or telling the truth.
Pardon?
How about just being sincere or telling the
truth?
We can
be sincere and tell the truth as we see it, you know, but we don't want to be gurus or anything like that to people. And I mean, it's not the business we're in. We're not in the business of politics, although we do follow it pretty closely, you know. But
we will deal with anything that occurs to us and anything in the air. We'll take and use if we can, and use if we can use it right.
And of course, all politicians aren't perfect. All rock musicians aren't perfect, but some of them are good guys. I know a lot of politicians who have perfectly good intentions and have good hearts and good minds, and they're being run out of office for one reason or another, to the point where nobody who is qualified, nobody who is brilliant and sincere, is going to want to run for office anymore. And so it just behooves everybody to be as aware as possible. I know people are trying to make a living and people are trying to put bread on the table and stuff, but it doesn't really cost you that much in time or energy to pick up a newspaper or to go to the polls and just put your 2 cents worth in.
But what will it cost
you? Otherwise,
you
can't really bitch about it, you know?
Down the line. I really think we pay for it.
And there's going to be a dear price to pay for it sooner or later if we don't participate more in what goes on in this country.
Don Henley and his co-writer, producer on Building the Perfect Beast, Danny Korchmar, discussed their philosophy that paid huge dividends for establishing Eagle Henley as a bona fide star on his own.
Well, there's no reason why it has to stop just because you're in your 30s or your 40s. You know, there's the whole gigantic baby boom generation, the largest generation that has ever lived in this country. And somebody has to address their concerns. And there's a place for rebellion and anger and all that. I mean, Danny and I are reasonably angry, you know. But it all depends on the way you express that anger. Do you express it in a constructive, positive way? Or is it just about denouncing everything that you come across? Frankly, I'm fairly good at denouncing, but I do it from a frame of reference that tries to express how much better I think things could be and ought to be.
We try to write songs that succeed on a lot of levels, you know, emotionally, intellectually, and viscerally, in terms of just, you know, the beat.
Yeah, if you get them in the crotch, their hearts and minds will follow.
Right. You know, a lot of our stuff is blues-based.
Precisely.
You know.
Based in history.
Mm-hmm.
Just one thing that worries both of us now is that a lot of new bands aren't very up on their rock and roll history. You know, we're losing a lot of the roots and the basics of what constituted rock and roll in the first place. We're getting a little further afield.
Well, if you want fresh water, you have to go to the well. Henley and I have been doing this since we were 15 years old. By now, we should know something about it. And that includes knowing the history of what we do and being able to draw from a lot of different influences and sources, especially the beginning, the first generation influences. You know, I think we're very lucky, Don and I, and people of our generation are lucky to have grown up with the music that we did. We grew up, we got a chance to listen to all the Motown stuff, Stax Vault, John Coltrane, the Beatles, Ravi Shankar.
60 soul music.
Yeah.
The Atlantic stuff. You know,
all this seminal stuff, first generation stuff.
You have to know where you come from. You know, you have to know about those that went before you.
To me, this is a much better base than growing up and thinking Kiss invented rock and roll in 1972. And to me, at some point, of course, that's the music you grew up with, you love it, I understand. But if you're going to be serious about music, you've got to go back. You got to go back, check out what the original stuff was. The guys invented rock. Check out Howlin' Wolf and Muddy Waters. Forget, you know, how can you sit there going, Aerosmith, greatest thing I ever heard. If you're a musician, Aerosmith may be the greatest thing ever. But man, check out where Aerosmith learned their stuff from. If you're not interested, you can't be bothered to check out the blues, then why should I listen to you? Why should I pay for your records? You don't know anything. You're dumb and you like being dumb. Why should I pay for you? Why should I support you?
Go, man.
You know, I get worked up about this because to me, you got to be smart. What I really mourn is that it was hip to be smart when we were coming up. The Beatles would come out with a record. Every track would be different. They'd be challenging. And we all loved them for it. Now it's like being smart is not hip. Now you're supposed to be as dumbass as possible. You get rewarded for being dumbass, or at least lowest common denominator.
It's also a very bad time for singers. It's some of the worst excuses passing for singers right now that I have ever heard in the history of rock and roll. You know, but you know, these things come and go, and the good stuff usually gets through. That's the good part about it.
Yeah, it's true. Cream does rise to that, and the good stuff does come through.
As someone who's been both musician, songwriter, and producer, I asked Korchmar about the producer's culpability in this trend towards lower standards in music, both performing and technically.
Producers certainly deserve a lot of the blame, but to a large degree, it's a conspiracy of mediocrity to some degree. We have a lot of records out right now that are about the drum sound, that are about the bass part, as opposed to being about a song. And it's boring. Who cares? It's not interesting, you know? We've heard enough. We've heard enough production records. For instance, the use of drum machines and synthesizers. People use them arbitrarily now just because it's less trouble than using a drummer, because it's going to be perfect from the beginning to the end, and we don't have to worry about it, and boof, there it is. People get the music they deserve.
Ooh.
You know? I'm sorry. You get the music you deserve.
So in other words,
buy it.
That's what I say.
Don't buy it. Save your money, kids. I was going to say, I think our values have changed considerably. You know, it's hard to find an album that has 10 great songs on it. It's very hard. I think we're seeing rave reviews of albums that are just okay. I think that people's values have decided, well, let's just turn it down a notch since we're not getting the kind of albums that we used to get. If you listen to the early Beatles or Stones albums, every song has something to offer. Every song is good. You know, now if an album comes out where every song is good, it's like a miracle. You can't even believe it. And the reason for that is it's damn hard to write 10 really good songs. It's hard. And I think what we're seeing is we're seeing, to some degree, a deficiency in the areas of pop music that are really hard, like singing in tune, singing really well and soulfully and expressing yourself, and in writing lyrics that have something to say. I think there's a callous kind of trend in some popular music where you see grown men trying to remove 14-year-old children from their allowances, basically. In other words, you're seeing grown men trying to figure out what a 14-year-old boy will like and aiming music at that 14-year-old boy. And I think that's callous and crass and low down.
Certainly a lowest common denominator type of approach.
It is, and it also has no respect for that 14-year-old boy either. It's saying, this guy is so dumb, we're just going to throw the same skateboard, long hair mentality at him, and he'll love it. Well, the thing is, I think I have more respect for people that make records that anyone from 10 years old to 80 years old would dig. You know, that's what Henley and I try to do. We don't assume people are stupid. We assume actually they're pretty smart. We don't play down to them. And what we're interested in is anyone of any age that can dig it. It better be good. And I mean, every track better be good. You know, otherwise they're ripping you off, folks. You're not getting your money's worth. You buy a record that only has 3 good tracks and you've just been ripped off. You've just been screwed. And don't support that artist, period.
I'm Redbeard. I'll be back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Don Henley and Danny Korchmar. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard. For Bearded Fish Productions, copyright 2014, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. And don't forget, you can visit 24/7 at inthestudio.net.